This week's Shiurim have been sponsored by Family Groshman, Leilu Nishmas, Reb Chaim Yosef Ben Yisachar Dov, Zichrono Levracha. Yud Beis Menachem Av, Tuesday the 31st of July, Rabbi Aaron Hirsch, the Megala Amukos, 252 Ways to Understand Vores Chanon. Today's Shiur is sponsored Leilu Nishmas, Sora Bas Vega Isla. Aleha Shalom.
So, I understand that this title is perhaps slightly out of the ordinary, but it contains within it the two reasons as to why we would be talking about the Megala Amukos at this moment in time. The first is that the Megala Amukos, as Yahrzeit, is tonight, but equally, the Megala Amukos, the most well-known sefer of the Megala Amukos, the one that's really called the Megala Amukos, is the one that he wrote on the first psukim of Vayes Chanon, where he explains those first few psukim in 252 separate ways, the gematria of Rav Loch, which is the response to Vayes Chanon, the 515 tefillos that Moshe Rabbeinu made in order to try and get into Eretz Yisrael. Ultimately, he was unsuccessful, and the response was Rav Loch. So the Megala Amukos explained these tefillos on 252 levels, and obviously the interesting thing is that in almost every year, the Megala Amukos' Yahrzeit is in Parashas Vayes Chanon. Who was he? So he was born in Poland in 1585 to a family that was not just a family of Torah. His grandfather was the Av Beis Din in Grodno, and he was named after his grandfather. But he was also born to a family that was a Miyuchas. It is said over in the name of the Baal Shem Tov that he would talk of three families that are known to be Miyuchasim. Although there are two Girsois, one is that it's Shapira, Horovitz, and Margulius, and one is that it is Shapira, Horovitz, and Rappaport. The second, I would have thought, is the more likely. First of all, it neatly works into Kohen Levi Yisrael, from Rappaport being the Kohen, Horovitz, the Levi. But also, it's well known that the Gro, who lived, of course, at the same time, wanted to be Mekayim Pidyon HaBen, and whenever he found a Kohen, would be paid himself, until he found the descendant of the Shach, who was a Rappaport, and he said that's a Kohen Miyuchas, so the two tie together. Either way, he was from a family of well-known individuals, both in terms of being Mechabrim of Sforim and of being involved in Tzorchei Tzibur. And at 18, he was married to the daughter of Ramesha Abelis, whose brother built the Isaac Shul, for those of you who have been to Krakow, a magnificent shul that's still there today, was built by the brother of the father-in-law of the Megala Amukos. His son, Megala Amukos' son, writes in the Hakdoma to the Sefer Megala Amukos, which was not printed during his lifetime, Nosen lo elikim oisho nechosim v'rav peninim, that he was actually zeicha to two shulchanos, to two tables, one of Ashiras and one of Torah, and from which he was very generous to the anim. But in addition, he didn't have to take anything, didn't have to take a salary from the community, and therefore he was able to make his voice heard, which means that certain issues obviously don't change with time. He became Rosh Hashiva in Krakow. His name was Rav Nosson Nota Shapira. And he was Rosh Hashiva in Krakow at the same time that the Bach was the Rav, though the Bach, Rav Yol Sirkus, died a few years later, 1640 or 1641. Now, he is known for, so to speak, his contribution to Kabbalah. As is known, until the 1500s, Kabbalah was the province of a select few. It was going from Rebbe to Talmud, or to a very small amount of Talmidim. And this changes in the 1500s, principally in Tzfas, with the Arizal and the Ramak and Reb Chaim Vital. But in Central and Eastern Europe, the three people who are responsible for the systemization and the dissemination of Kabbalah are the Shlo, who dies in 1630, Rav Herschel Ostropoller, who dies, Shimshon Ostropoller, who dies in 1648, and the Megala Mukas, who died in 1633. So those three are the ones who are known as having taught Kabbalah, and from there on having publicized Kabbalah, and they also printed Svarim of Kabbalah. And his descendants, probably his great-grandson, Rabbi Yonason Eibeshitz, writes in the Hakdama to his own sefer, Kresi Uplesi, that the Megala Mukas was the per shlishi to the Arizal. In other words, that it came to him through a Talmud. The Talmud was Rabbi Yisrael Tzurug, who the Megala Mukas quotes a number of times in his own Svarim. Now, there are those who see a link between the Megala Mukas and Shabtai Tzvi. But this is based on a mistake, because there is another Rav Nosson Shapira, also born in Krakow, who then went to live in Yerushalayim and ended up travelling to Amsterdam and was also very involved in Kabbalah. But he made contact there not only with the Dutch Jews, but with the Christians, especially the English Christians, who had millenarian views that the Jews would be converted to Christianity, and there are some quite unusual outcomes to his visit to Amsterdam, and that had a shachas to Shabtai Tzvi. But it is not the Megala Mukas. Besides, for anything else, the Megala Mukas died in 1633, which is decades before the main episode of Shabtai Tzvi's life. He died at the age of 48, and he's buried in Krakow in the old Beis HaKoros there. And his son also writes that on the Matseva we see the Hesped said on him that Oimrim Olov, that Elio Hanovi spoke to him ponim el ponim. And his son writes that Elio said to him that when he says Tikkun Chatzos, Kach bekach mekoinenim pamalya shel mala, the way you say Tikkun Chatzos is the way it is said in Shemayim. So we're talking about somebody of whom Shemayim was maskim with what he was doing. The Svarim that he was the author of, so Benigle, there is a perish of his which is printed nowadays, has been for the last almost 300 years, on the side of the Rif, Chidushei Anshei Shem. In his lifetime, Benista, his perish al HaZohar, was printed, but all the others were only printed afterwards, and some, unfortunately, not in their entirety. There are the 250 ways to be mefarish those first few psukim of Weschanon, which is called the Megala Mukas. More recently, there is the Megala Mukas al HaTorah, which contains those parts of the manuscript that have been put together. Bereshis, he was mefarish in 720 ways. The posuk Ma'almim Alumim Besoich HaSodeh, he was mefarish 130 ways. The word Vayikra, with the small aleph, he had 1,000 perushim to. We nowadays have less than 300 of them, as well as authoring Truvas in Halacha and a commentary to the Torah and Beis Yosef, but most of the Truvas have been lost, and the commentary itself we no longer have either. Unfortunately, many parts of the manuscript, especially on Bereshis and Ma'almim Alumim, disappeared. It's unclear why. It could either be because of those people who opposed Kabbalah being taught and Kal Vachomer being printed, or by people who hoped, since this was done La'acha Moisei, and people knew more of him, they hoped that by selling parts of his manuscript, they would become wealthy. And once again, his son writes about this, that all of the Svarim are divided and spread amongst others. You can see a little bit in this city, a little bit in another city, and that his father, in his droshus, mentioned these people and cursed them with the klolos and arurim found in Dvarim. Because it's not just that two parts of the Sefer were printed at different times, but that the flow was misunderstood by the printers. For instance, in Eufen Vov, he would talk about the concept of Vov, and when he got to Eufen Mem Beis, he would talk about the 42-lettered name of Hashem. In Eufen Mem Gimel, he would talk about the concept of Challah. But once things are printed without the full stretch, so these are ending up not as being the 6th, or the 42nd, or the 43rd, and an aspect of what he's trying to explain is obviously lost in the process. Now, the outcome of the Megala Mukus's teachings are still left to us, but there are also a number of stories told over in the name of the Megala Mukus, which, unlike many stories, have a very real Mekor, either because they've been passed down ish mipi ish, or because they are found recorded, or at least they were found recorded, in the community sefer of Krakow. One of which comes to us through Mordechai Orenstein, and the Avis being ish mipi ish, is that at one stage the Taz was the Av Bezdin in Lvov, in Lemberg. And he came to Krakow because his Shreya lived there. The Bach was the father-in-law of the Taz. And the town came out to greet him. They gave him covered godel when he came, except for the Megala Mukus, who ignored him. And not just that he wasn't there to greet him, but even when he was in shul, he completely ignored the presence of the Taz. And this went on for a week, that the Taz was there and he was completely ignored by the Megala Mukus, to the extent that he went to the Bach and he said, you know, he has tainus to the extent of which he is being humiliated by the Megala Mukus. After a week, the Megala Mukus gave him shalom and said to him that, believe me, it's not what I wanted to do, but you've had a nidui min hashamayim for 30 days, and it only came to an end now. And the nidui happened because when you left town to come here, and the town came to see you off, there was an almana who came, and she was crying, she had a child with her, and you ignored her. And this made a rash in Shamayim, and they put you into Cherem. The Cherem was for 30 days, and it just came to an end now. And he said, I didn't understand that her crying was because of something she wanted from me. I thought it was because her child was ill. And this gives, obviously, some insight into how far-reaching the abilities of the Megala Mukus were. Unbelievably, to this very day, the Megala Mukus's presence is marked. because he had a shul just off the main square in Kazimierz, just off Sharoka Square. The building itself is no longer there. Well, the actual place is no longer there, but the building, so to speak, still stands. And his shul was on the middle floor, and he lived on the top floor. If you go there nowadays, you will see that every night, besides for the light bulb that is in the ceiling, there is a light on the windowsill. And in fact, in the contract for renting this apartment, it says that you have to have a light burning in the window all the way through the night, every night. And it's a non-Jew who lives there at the moment. A friend of mine in Krakow was considering renting there, and then he said to me, "Sugar, I'm going to live in the apartment where the Magala Mukus was. I won't last the day." So it's a goy. And they have this light there, and the reason is because the Magala Mukus would light a candle in the beginning of the night, and that candle would burn all the way through. So till today, in the 21st century, you can see a zecha of the Magala Mukus in his own town. Now, the 252 Eifanim takes every letter, every word of those psukim, and is mefarish it al pi remez, drush, and said, revealing an incredible depth and breadth of Torah. And it is something which really I won't do justice to. I will share some of it with you, but I really won't be doing it justice, because it's so interconnected. There is so much that you see in such a short amount of text that it gives us some hasoga of what we mean when we talk about the Torah being Rechova Min Hayam. And the essence of those 252 Eifanim is why Moshe wanted to go into Eretz Yisrael and why he wasn't allowed. So, for instance, he brings in one of the Eifanim, I think it's Chof, that at the Meimariva, Moshe Rabbeinu is told that he won't enter Eretz Yisrael. And the Meimariva is Asher Rovu Bnei Yisrael. It caused Machlekes in Bnei Yisrael. Therefore, he's not going to come into the land. The idea that Megala Mukus writes about is based on the Pasuk in Yirmiyahu, that the words of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Ka'esh Ukupatish Yifaitzeitz Selah. He explains that the gematria of the word Patish is the gematria of the word Mate Moshe. And his gematria is, by the way, I started working out the first few. They are to the number. I gave up after a while because the Sefer is just molly begodish with them, tying together all parts of Torah. And what he explains is that as a result of Mei Meriva, there was machlekes in the clarity of Torah. And that's why Moshe Rabbeinu is no longer allowed into Eretz Yisrael. So Hagam, there is now Shivim Ponim L'Torah, but it comes with a lack of clarity, and that is tied back to what Moshe Rabbeinu did at Mei Meriva. He often talks about the Erev Rav and wanted him to be Mesakein, that which the Erev Rav had created. And in one of the Eifanim, he says, Ebro Nov, or a quote from these first few psukim, Ebro is Gematria 278, which is the Gematria of the word Kruvim, because he wanted to be Mesakein, the Chibur that becomes invisible when there is Churban. In the Kruvim show, they demonstrate the Chibur between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he goes on to solidify his claim. He says, "Ata chileisa laharis es avdecha," that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one who was megala to Moshe Rabbeinu a level of understanding of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer explains that it was at the snare, the very beginning, at HaChiloisa, and the very first Gilui of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Moshe. He explained to him the Shemos, the names of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And in fact, it talks about it's Yodcha Chazoka. Chazoka says the Megalamukas is Gematria Hasneh. And at that stage, he was given the das, the ability to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Das doesn't only mean knowledge, it also means a connection and intimacy. And in fact, the Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer records that that's when the Malachim said the bracha of Baruch Atu Hashem Choinein Hadas on that event. However, HaKadosh Baruch Hu answers by saying Rav Loch. You are responsible for the Erev Rav, and therefore you have been machzir, you have taken away from the full revelation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Erev Rav is Gematria Das, and it's also Gematria B'Bilam Ben Ba'era. And Bilam is known as having been, as the Torah tells us, Yodea Das Elyon. That's what was taken away through the concept of the Erev Rav. And he then connects it to Shamchazoyin, Azoel, the two Malachim who came to Oretz. And then he says to Moshe, don't continue talking to me, Oid Badovar Hazeh. And Badovar is the Rosh Yeshiva's Ben David Beregel Ravi. That it would not be Moshe Rabbeinu, who would be the fourth leg of the Merkava, it would be David. It would be Aaron, Abraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, and David. And if you think this is somewhat esoteric, this is the bit that I understood. But he then goes on far beyond that. But I'd like to share with you one piece of the Megala Amukos where I've been zeicher to see more of a binyan, because a chaver of mine, Rabbi Daniel Baron, showed me the shiur which Rabbi Moshe Shapira gave on this inyan, and that clarified things a little bit. We know that there were 2,000 years of Tohu, 2,000 years of Torah, and 2,000 years of Mashiach. In the Hakdama of the Rivad to the Sefer Yetzira, he writes that we need two dalads, two delosos, two doors, to prevent the waters of Tohu from overwhelming the 2,000 years of Torah. What does that mean? So the Ramban explains that the Sheshis and Mebreshis parallel these 6,000 years. And at the end of the first 2 days, the world was only water, and that was only split on the third day. But otherwise, there was just water. Water is the opposite of any type of tsura, of any type of shape or form. It is the concept of chomer. Whereas Torah gives form to everything. It gives a purpose to everything that was created. So Torah is tsura, and water is chomer. And therefore, we have to prevent the water from overwhelming the tsura that the world has when Torah comes into it. What are these two dalads, says the Rivad? It's the dalad in the name of Hashem, Shakai, and it's the dalad in the name of Hashem, which is Adnus. In the Aleph, dalad Nun Yud, and in the Shin, dalad Yud, those two dalads prevent the Tohu from reappearing. Adkan, the words of the Rivad. Says the Megala Amukos, if you take away those two dalads, you are left with the words Yesh, in the case of Shakai, and Ani, in the case of Adnus. And he says, this is the meaning when Chava says, Hanochosh Hishiani V'Oichel. Hishiani is made up of these two words, Yesh and Ani, and that's where the Zuhama of the Nochosh came into being. And this is what David HaMelech is referring to when he says, Pischuli Shari Tzedek, that these doors to Torah should be opened again. What is the Yesh and the Ani? Yesh is the concept of Hashpah, of there being a connection to something. It's what I do. Whereas Ani is what I am. It's the concept of Malchus. If a person believes that they are a melech, and that they are mashpia, that they are the one that makes things happen, because they use their bechira and they use their abilities to make the world run, then they're living a life of illusion, because nothing exists outside of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. As we say, Adon Olam Hashem Malach b'terem kol yitzir nivra, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was the only power before anything was created, v'acharei kichlei sakar levado yimloich neira, there is only HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And my existence is only real to the extent that I bring HaKadosh Baruch Hu into the world. The more I megala HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the world, the more of a real existence I have. Everything else is just an illusion. It's a dream, but none of it is real. That's the Emes Malkeinu. And this is really what Hillel is referring to when he says, Im Ani Kan HaKoel Kan, he is referring to the Ani of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Which is why Hillel's name is Gematria, the Adnus of Aleph Dalet Nun Yud. Because the Ani that he is bringing into focus is the Ani that is brought about when you bring the Adon Olam into the world. And this allows all of the Hashpah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be brought out in this world. Full sheer koma of all of Bria. And therefore, Matan Torah is compared to a wedding. And when we then carry out the terms of that marriage, so as HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, V'onoichi eye impicho v'hoirei sicho. V'hoirei sicho literally means I will teach you, but it is also connected to the word heroyoin, that I will allow you, Knesset Yisrael, to become the carrier of more gilui, of more revelation, if you keep to that marriage that is contracted at Matan Torah, where you understand that there's nothing in the world, there was no sound in the world, other than HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, as the Rambam writes in Hilchus Melachim, in Perek Beis, that the Novi is Omeid Lifnei HaMelech U'mishtachaveh Loi Arza. The Novi bows down to the king. Now the Novi is the one that made the Melech. Can't be Memana a Melech without it. So normally the person who makes the king is greater than the king. If they appoint them to the position, if they have the ability to do so, then clearly they are greater than the melech. But that's not what the Novi did. The Novi didn't elect a person to be the melech. They elected a person to be a means to reveal the real malchus that exists in the world. And if, despite being the melech, or more correctly, because I am the melech, I reveal true Malchus, then I am carrying out my real function as being a Melech. Let's get back to what the Nachash was saying. The Nachash said to Chava that on the day they eat of the Eitz Hadas, v'hiyisem ke'elokim, yodei tov v'ra, they will be the ones who will be like HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the Nachash, on a certain level, was not telling a lie. It was true. There would be the ability to be a boicher, to use bechira. And that moment of choice would be a moment of creation. But everything that followed afterwards, all that would be created through that choice, would all be an illusion. And therefore, the two dullards are required to reinsert oddness, instead of seeing the world as ani, and to make it shakai, rather than seeing it as I have yesh, that I have the ability to create yesh me'ayin, which comes about through bechira. In order to not misunderstand those two things, we need the two dullards to be inserted to prevent there being toivu, to prevent all Torah, all of the voice of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, from being erased, chas v'shalom, so to speak. Where are the two dullards that we have today? There is the dullard at the end of the proclamation of Shema Yisrael, and the dullard at the end of Baruch Shem Kvod Malchuso Elam Va'ed. The dullard at the end of Shema Yisrael is the existence, is the udness, and the dullard at the end of Va'ed means that the Hashpah is forever. That's the dullard as it is supposed to be. This is literally a crumb of the Megillah Mukos, even of that one comment of his. Just finish with one last thing, and that is possibly the most famous story that is told, and interestingly enough, it is after the Megillah Mukos died, that a young man came to Krakow, and he came to the head of the Chevra Kedisha, and he said to him that the plot, the place next to where the Megillah Mukos is empty, and he'd like to be buried there. So initially they said to him, you're crazy, you know, it's not a free-for-all. So he carried on pushing, and he said, I'm prepared to pay a large sum of money. And the head of the Chevra Kedisha was eventually convinced, and the person made him sign. He signed. He paid him that day, that night he died. And the head of the Chevra Kedisha, having not told anybody about it, wasn't prepared to bury him next to the Megillah Mukos, so he buried him in a different part of the Beis HaKvaros. The Megillah Mukos appeared to him in a dream. Tainus, he said, we made a deal, I paid for it, you signed for it, how could you break your word? So he dismissed it. It happened a second time, a third time, so eventually the person who died... Sorry. Yes, the person who was Nikta appeared to the head of the Chevra Kedisha and said, what about the deal? So eventually this person went to the Rav, who at the time would either have been the Bach or the Tosfos Yontif, who responded, Lo bach shamayim hi. He can't come to you from Shemayim and want to take you to Din Torah. He has to come here. So they set up in the shul, a curtain, and behind the curtain they heard the voice, the Rav heard the voice of the Nifta, who came with the Tainus. So he says, listen, you're right, but perhaps it's not a covered for the Megillah Mukos that you should be buried there. But I'm not sure, I'll be Yerudea, that it's correct. So we will do as follows. I will get the Chevra Kedisha to dig a plot next to the Megillah Mukos, and if you're Royu, you will move yourself there. They did that, and the next morning, Chachava, the grave next to the Megillah Mukos was covered over, and they put a matseva there which said, Yagid Olav Reoi. And even before the war, the matseva was there. They, in Tovkuf Tzadik Beis, they put a new matseva on the keva, which said, Tzion Nefesh Chaya, Poi Motzanu, V'das Shmei L'Rik Yoganu. We don't know who it is. Yan Nimtzel Kovu Bashmanim, he was buried the way he was. V'atim Cheno Isos of Merev Shonim, and the letters have been erased. Ochein Yagid Alei Reu Goinu Zeinu Megillah Mukos. The fact that he's buried next to the Megillah Mukos is testifying to his greatness. Ki Rav Kvoida B'Shem Tiferes De'Eshor B'Dor Dor Maskeres. It's a tremendous covet that he is here, and therefore we put a Matseva Chadosha Al Kivri. And as I say, this is a Maisa took place after the Megillah Mukos. But even after his death, clearly the tshuka to be buried there, and the ability to be buried there, and the Yagid Olav Reu of the Megillah Mukos all testify to the greatness of these people and to the Megillah Mukos himself.